Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, joining us on Hardline is Niagara District Councilman David Rivera. David, thank you for joining us, and happy Labor Day to you.
Hey, thank you. Same to you as well.
Thank you very much. Want to start with a huge story. I know that you have been on top of the DJ Granville story, the Erie County Sheriff's narcotics chief, put in a guilty plea this month. It was for reckless driving and leaving the scene of a property damage accident. He was also suspended without pay for 30 days. This all goes back last year, where Granville was caught on camera in Buffalo driving a county-owned vehicle into parked cars on Prospect Avenue. You, like I said, you've been on top of this for months now. What was your reaction when you first heard of the guilty plea?
Well, my first reaction was, you know, accountability. The second was frustration when I learned that the officers involved in the responding to the incident didn't cooperate with the Niagara District Attorney. I was very frustrated at a time when we're trying to develop trust. I think there's been a breakdown in trust between the community at large and law enforcement as a result of the lack of cooperation. It smells and it looks as though there was some kind of conspiracy and complicity and evasion by not cooperating with the Niagara District County Attorney.
And I think at one of the council meetings, I remember hearing something about a vow of secrecy when I think it might have been when police leadership appeared before the council and you were heading up that meeting. Do you think this is another example of that, of a vow of secrecy within the police department?
I think it is. I mean, they're trying to limit their exposure to any penalties that might come, and they're avoiding cooperating with a district attorney whose job is to prosecute, hold people accountable. And even when the district attorney offered the four police officers, hey, you're not the suspects in this, even then, when there was no exposure to them, they didn't cooperate with the district attorney. And that, to me, is very concerning, because at some other point, police officers responding to incidences where there are some action that they're taking, they can easily say, well, we're not going to cooperate with you. This sets a terrible precedent. As I said before, at a time where we're trying to develop trust, that trust is being broken by law enforcement itself. So they have an extraordinary amount of power and authority over people's lives and decisions that they make. And you hope, and they're trained to make the right decisions. In this case, just based on the information we have from the day of the incident, of things that they should have done and didn't do, to me is problem. It's troubling. I'm a former law enforcement officer, and we were trained in the police academy how to deal with incidents like that. And there was a complete failure to the point that it looks like an alleged cover-up and conspiracy, because there were five officers there. None of them took any action. On the contrary, the actions they took is contrary to the training that they've received. And so based on that, I join other elected officials in asking the state attorney general's office to take a look at this for misconduct or any illegalities that might exist as a result of their actions. And I'm hopeful that the district attorney or the attorney general will look at this. We've also asked our governor to refer this to the attorney general's office. She made a comment on transparency and accountability. Well, you know, right now, because of conflicts of interest, because of the length of time that it has taken, the perception that there's conspiracy and there's a lack of cooperation here, that is reason that the governor should refer it to the Attorney General's office to take a good look at.
And Governor Hochul did make a comment this week referring that she could potentially bring this to Attorney General Letitia James. I'm sure you saw that. Is that something that the council will continue to pursue?
Well, I sent a letter to the governor as a Niagara District Council member who represents the constituents and chair of the Police Oversight Committee to seriously consider referring this to the Attorney General's office. There has to be a second set of eyes looking on this. And I think that they probably have more power and authority to subpoena and to bring people in where perhaps the district attorney for the Niagara County didn't have.
I want to go back to the point you made about trying to build public trust, because there's tension in certain parts of the city between law enforcement and residents. I can think right now on the east side of the city, there's a plan to build a police training center or firing range right near Central Terminal, and that's getting pushed back. Isn't this one of those things, these actions that create terms like ACAB? I don't know if you ever heard that before. All cops are, you know what? It's just another one of those things where, well, if you can't really cry foul if you're a police officer because you're sort of bringing it on yourself, right?
Well, you know, the problem, obviously, that I have with this is that as Police Oversight Committee Chair, I understand and appreciate that the overwhelming majority of police officers are doing a great job. It's always a few people that tarnish the badge and the reputation of the Buffalo Police Department and law enforcement in general. So that's why, as you know, command staff and supervisors and administrators, we have to hold police officers accountable, or else they're going to tarnish the badge. People are going to be less trusting in the police department. And as a result of that, they're not going to cooperate with the police department. They're going to say, hey, why should we cooperate with law enforcement when we can't even trust them, where they're just as bad as the bad guys, where they can't even police themselves? And so that's why not only do we hold these five officers accountable, we should hold command staff accountable to make sure that they hold the bad actors accountable. And this is all allegations, but it just doesn't pass the smell test from day one. And the length of time that it has taken, and the fact that the police officers even now are failing to cooperate with law enforcement officials, is problematic and troubling, not only to me, but the community at large. And as a result, as you said, there is a lack of trust.
And one more on this topic for you here. The Buffalo News reported this week that DJ Granville's sister-in-law is now being investigated. She was on the scene of that investigation. What do you know about that investigation now?
I really don't know much. There really hasn't been much transparency or communication between the commissioner, his command staff, and the Common Council, or either even with my office and myself as chair of the police oversight, very little communication other than they try to limit their exposure. I have a concern with that. When you say you're trying to limit your exposure, what you're worried about is, you know, whether it's criminality, whether it's lawsuits, they're limiting that exposure. My concern is by doing that, you're not getting down to doing justice. You're not getting down to doing what's right. And that is a concern of mine going forward with either law enforcement or even our law department, whose job is trying to limit our exposure to lawsuits. But at some point, what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong, and we should hold people accountable. And you know, if you're just trying to limit exposure, basically you're saying, hey, we have to, you know, we can't disclose things that might be inculpatory, things that are bad, because it exposes us. And I think that's wrong. And I think we need to look at that going forward, that we're always concerned about our exposure. Well, we should be concerned about the bad actors and the consequences that they should pay as a result of their actions, and less worried about the exposure that we may have.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And another thing, David, that I'm sure you are keeping your eye on, the Common Council returns to session this Tuesday after about a month-long recess or so. It's back to school for kids. Does it kind of feel like back to school for you too?
It does. You know, after a month off, which only means that we're not having committee meetings in City Hall, we're still active in our respective districts and meeting with business folks, meeting with constituents, block clubs, festivals. We're still busy, but it's nice to get a breather once in a while and get back to. But there are a lot of decisions going forward. As you saw, we had an election this June, and we're looking forward to a new administration and perhaps a different vision for how policing is going to be handled going forward. That is my hope on a number of levels, both financial, in terms of policies, in terms of, you know, what our priorities are going forward, how we're going to handle the budget, what we're going to do with, you know, snow removal in the wintertime. There are just a number of things that we're going to be dealing with, but primarily it's probably going to be the budget. How are we going to plug the hole, the deficit? And law enforcement, of course. I mean, we're looking at this, and everybody is aware of this. I believe every elected official, everybody that's running for office is looking at this and say, hey, what are we going to do about policing? We got to clean this mess up. And I'm hopeful that the new administration puts us on a different path.
And, of course, the new administration you mentioned there, which means that Chris Scanlon will be returning to his seat on the Common Council with a new mayor taking office. We haven't heard much in a while about how this process will work. It's been at 8 members for so long now, the council. What are you anticipating when now Mayor Scanlon returns to his council seat, and how does that work? Does he retake his position that he had before?
Well, if Chris or the acting mayor decides to return, he returns back to his South District seat. There'll be a reorg meeting come January where we elect new leadership to the Common Council. So whoever gets a majority of the votes will be the next, you know, council president at large and president pro temp. If he returns, if he doesn't return, then there'll be a backfill. Somebody from the South District would have to backfill that position. So we really don't know what his plans are. I mean, rumors are out there, but there's nothing official. We have not heard from the acting mayor or anyone else for that matter that he will be leaving for another opportunity, for other opportunities.
So if he opts to not return, then you mentioned backfilling from the South District, what would that process look like? Is it an election or is it someone just appointed by the rest of the council?
I imagine somebody would be appointed. We'd have to look at the charter to see if there's a vacancy. If he says, hey, I'm resigning, there'll be a vacancy that the council would have to fill with a South District representative who has support, and that person would have to serve until there's an election. If there's an early election, which would probably be next year, he would probably serve until there is an election next year.
And it does seem like it's been forever. It's been it'll be a year and a half that the council was down to 8 members. How does going back to 9 change the dynamic at all? Does it change anything, or is it just business as usual?
Yeah, it does change the dynamics. You know, you need 5 votes for a majority. Right now, you know, there's a 4-4, so you need 4 votes for a majority. I think the residents of South District deserve representation, and hopefully the acting mayor will make a decision, or he'll come back to serve out his term. But South Buffalo needs and deserves to have representation in the common council when it comes to voting on things that impact the whole city and their district.
And, of course, tomorrow is Labor Day, Councilman. What do you think of Labor Day? What does it mean to you? And what's your message for the people of Buffalo and in your district?
Well, you know, you think of labor, you think of, the people that are out there, whether it's the city, the state, the county, whether it's private industry, they go out there and continue to serve in the capacity they serve and provide the things that we need. I think of labor. I think of, the people that get up early in the morning and go to work, the people from out in the migrant fields to high up the ladder. So I just think of everybody in labor. I'm a former labor leader. Before I became a police officer, I was president local 740, which is organized labor. So I appreciate all the things that labor do here for us locally and throughout the country.
I did that. Did not know that. That's some cool stuff to know. So you have a very special attachment.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Councilman David Rivera, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And hopefully you have a wonderful holiday and good luck heading back into the council chambers this coming week.
We love talking with David Rivera here on WBEN as the council heads back to session on Tuesday.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.